New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, it is my privilege to introduce another in this series of our programs brought to you each Sunday afternoon and present to you your spokesman, Father Coughlin.
Ladies and gentlemen, and friends. Ladies and gentlemen, and friends. Today, it is impossible for me to make answer to Mr. Elliot Roosevelt. In my stead, and with far better taste, I have the happiness to present to you the president of the Catholic International Truth Society, an organization established in the year 1898. For the past seven years, the Reverend Dr. Edward Lodge Curran of Brooklyn, New York, has been the outstanding president of this organization. This reverend gentleman and friend and protagonist has volunteered most kindly to take my place before the microphone this afternoon and to deliver to you an answer to Mr. Elliot Roosevelt, Dr. Curran.
My dear friends, several weeks ago, Father Coughlin, the most outstanding crusader in the cause of social justice in the United States for the past 12 years, did me the honor to invite me to be a guest speaker over this network that is at present carrying his message of hope and action into the ears and minds of millions of listeners. Needless to say, I was delighted with Father Coughlin's invitation and happy to accept it. With the permission of my ecclesiastical superiors, I am here today to take advantage of it. No radio phenomenon in the radio history of the United States has been so remarkable and outstanding as the achievements of Father Coughlin, flowing forth from this fair shrine of a little flower in Royal Oak into every hamlet and highway of our beloved country. For the greater number of those years, his voice was the only voice raised in the cause of social justice, the only voice translating the message of the papal encyclicals of Pope Leo XIII and Pope Pius XI into the language of the common people, the only voice calling for a living annual wage, the only voice calling for increase of production and justice of distribution and plenteous consumption of the wealth of America, and the only voice denouncing, even as Pope Pius XI denounced, the tyranny of the money changers in the temple and the slavery which the international dictators of credit have imposed upon a once free and a once happy people. His message of social justice was not the dry and crisp and brittle message of the professional economist who cannot see beyond the limits of his own statistical tables. His message of social justice was based upon and inflamed by the principles of Christ and the Christian civilization which Christ gave the world in which we live. To the sharecroppers starving in the South, this great crusader of social justice did not merely promise bread. He spoke of well-filled harvest fields, but he also spoke of the wind-swept uplands that lead to God. To the poor and suffering everywhere, he did not merely speak of relief. Relief should be but a transitory inn on the way to home. He denounced the starvation wages paid by government to those unemployed without any fault of their own, but he also spoke of love of God and love of neighbor and confidence in the spirit of a united Americanism. A regimental radical with such an audience would have plunged this country into the throes of civil warfare. A crusader of social justice such as he, vibrant with the social justice teachings of Christ, restrained men from disaster and despair. For these things, the common people of the United States owe Father Coughlin an undying debt of gratitude. His mind appreciated their thoughts. His heart was attuned to the beatings of their hearts. His vision illumined their souls. His voice was an echo of hope in a desolate land. Like all human beings, Father Coughlin is liable to err, but no one can ever take away from him the glory of these accomplishments. By instructing the common people of America in the fundamental principles of Christian ethics and economics, and by preserving the common people of America from the ravages of communism that would turn these United States into a slave state on the model of Soviet Russia, his place is secure in the hearts of his countrymen, irrespective of race or rank or religion. In the beginning, his voice was almost the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Today, it is a voice upon which millions of the common people of America, Catholics and Protestants and Jews, depend for a knowledge of economic facts and for an inspiration to lead them to the promised land of peace and plenty. No other private citizen of America commands the radio audience which he does. Some 50 stations are in his network. He is no longer an isolated voice. Millions are in agreement with him in the fight to preserve Christian civilization in the United States of America. Millions are with him in the effort to keep the United States out of war. Millions are with him in the fight to break the money monopoly that brought these United States to its knees in an economic depression, and that would bury these United States of America in a totalitarian grave. He is a believer in racial and religious tolerance. He strikes indiscriminately at every enemy of our country's welfare, irrespective of the race or religion to which this enemy belongs. No effort on the part of intolerant liberals has been able to silence his radio voice, and for the sake of freedom and liberty, no effort on the part of these same intolerant liberals to silence his voice must ever succeed. As a believer in social justice, as a friend and fellow priest, and as a fellow opponent of all dictatorships and all persecution, I am happy to appear before Father Coughlin's radio audience. Thus, I feel in duty bound to reply to one of the most false and fictitious assaults ever made against Father Coughlin in recent years. If the attack against Father Coughlin were made by an unknown citizen, it would be useless to waste radio time in answering it. The attack to which I refer, however, was made Saturday night a week ago by a man whose name is Elliot Roosevelt and who happens by circumstance of birth to be a son of the President of the United States. Irrespective of the presence or lack of argument in his attack, Elliot Roosevelt knows full well that his false and unwarranted denunciation of Father Coughlin will receive more attention from the fact of his relationship with the president than it would have coming out of the mouth of an ordinary speaker or commercially paid news commentator. In fact, it is doubtful if Elliot Roosevelt would ever be on the air in the guise of a speaker if he were not in the radio business, and if he were not the son of the President of the United States. Therefore, such an attack should be answered logically, objectively, and in a spirit of Christian charity, a spirit which is strangely lacking in the thoughts and wording of the Rooseveltian attack. Moreover, If the attack on Father Coughlin by Elliot Roosevelt had been limited to Mr. Roosevelt's own personal opinions about the wisdom of Father Coughlin's policies or the principles of social justice, not one of which Mr. Roosevelt saw fit to repudiate, it would be useless to spend these precious moments in reviving a family feud. Elliot Roosevelt, however, demanded the punishment of censorship for what he was pleased to call the anti-Semitic oratory of Father Coughlin. This is strange language for a national radio broadcaster in the United States. This is strange language for a supposed liberal. This is strange language for a New Dealer. For censorship is the bugaboo of all liberals. It is the relic, so we are told, in the liberal trash that goes by the name of literature in this country, of the Dark Ages. The truth is that this New Deal dynasty, not satisfied with having attempted a purge of senators, is now trying to purge all citizens who dare criticize the New Deal experimentations. The accusation that Father Coughlin has been anti-Semitic in his oratory is a strange charge. It was accompanied by no proof. It was substantiated by no facts. It was just a rehash of what is being said by the leftist leaders of this country, who think no charge too low or too unworthy if it succeeds in smearing the object of its attack. Mr. Roosevelt should remember that an accusation is not proof, and that an indictment is not a conviction. It were more intelligent had Mr. Roosevelt emulated the methods of any thinking man who presumes to attack or criticize. Submit your proof, if you have any, Mr. Roosevelt, of Father Coughlin's supposed anti-Semitic radio broadcasts. Liberty of speech is the cornerstone of all political liberty. He who would tamper with or destroy that liberty of speech is therefore anti-American. And by professing publicly his desire to rid the airways of Father Coughlin's voice, Mr. Roosevelt indicated one of two things. Either he and the group with which he is associated cannot stand criticism, or else the members of that group, including himself, fear the peering rays of the lamp of truth. Without freedom of speech on the radio, who would arouse the American public to the dangers of the world court, to the un-Americanism of the Supreme Court packing plan, to the truth of the entire Spanish question, and to the insidious dangers which lurked beneath the recent attempt to throw us into war known as the Neutrality Act? Nothing can be gained and all can be lost by surrendering the freedom of the airways. And the owners of broadcasting stations themselves should be alarmed in this crisis. Alarmed and determined to please the American public and sustain the best principles of Americanism rather than to please the passing phenomena of a messianic-minded group whose millions would eventually swallow up the properties and the prerogatives of radio. The despot always crushes free speech to earth. Today, as in the days when a Magna Carta was written, there is still a dictatorial King John who would banish every priest who opposes him. Alas, Mr. Roosevelt, have you forgotten your history? Have you forgotten the birth of the Magna Carta, together with its characters, the nefarious King John, and the noble priest who opposed them and fought for human liberties? Nevertheless, history, tradition, Magna Carta, King John, and a banished priest of God do not evidently stand in your way when you are desirous, without benefit of fact, but only with presumption of name, to spread the malicious untruth that Father Coughlin is an anti-Semite. You only hope to arouse against the radio priest an unjust feeling on the part of ill-informed Jews and Gentiles. In your heart, you know that Father Coughlin is consumed with fighting communism, with denouncing Jewish as well as non-Jewish communists, something which neither you nor those whose proud name you bear have ever had the courage to do. And may I remind you, Mr. Roosevelt, that the Magna Carta still lives, and that the only immortality enjoyed upon this earth by King John is associated with the victory of the priest whom he opposed. The priest who was responsible for writing into the Magna Carta the priceless heritage of freedom. Judge the whole man, Mr. Roosevelt, by the entirety of his career. Your own radio career, I dare say, would suffer by isolating one episode in it and by making that episode the criterion of a general judgment. The private and the public life of Father Coughlin will stand the spotlight of publicity much better than the private and public lives of some of those associated with you, Mr. Roosevelt, in your attempt to silence the radio voice of the common people of America. Father Coughlin's radio activities and arrangements are an open book. He is on the air because the common people want him there. He is on the air because the elected governmental officials of this nation have betrayed the interests of the people by an iniquitous financial system which has robbed the Congress of these United States of the right to create and control the medium of the distribution of wealth. He has nothing to hide about his radio activities or about the business aspects of any movement in which he may be interested. He has never made a single cent of personal profit because of his radio activity, because of his blood relationship, or because of his position. He belongs to no family dynasty whose accumulated wealth under the present administration is a sad contrast to its preachment of interest in the starving one-third of America. He holds no whip of patronage, and he fears no whip of censorship. For well he knows that just as the Congress of the United States is arising to break forever the whip of patronage and to save America from the continuation of a family dynasty in power, so will the people rise in their might to break the whip of censorship which a member of that same family dynasty would use to drive Father Coughlin off the air. Father Coughlin, Mr. Roosevelt, is a tribune of the American people, interested in the preservation of Americanism and in the inauguration of a Christian regime of social justice. Mr. Roosevelt, you are the son of the President of the United States, paid for your broadcast, and interested in the profits which may accrue to you while the Roosevelt dynasty rides high in Washington and throughout the country. Mr. Roosevelt's implied denunciation of anti-Semitism is commendable. It is not, however, unique. Every real American citizen is opposed to anti-Semitism and to anti-Protestantism and to anti-Catholicism as well. Anti-Semitism means persecution of the Jew because he is a Jew. That type of persecution should not exist in the United States of America. We challenge Mr. Roosevelt to prove Father Coughlin personally guilty of it. Anti-Protestantism means persecution of a Protestant because he is a Protestant. That type of persecution should not exist in the United States of America. We challenge Mr. Roosevelt to prove Father Coughlin personally guilty of it. Anti-Catholicism means persecution of the Catholic because he is a Catholic. That type of persecution should not exist in the United States of America. We challenge Mr. Roosevelt to prove Father Coughlin personally guilty of it. For the past 150 years, the federal government has never been guilty of anti-Semitism, anti-Protestantism, or anti-Catholicism. We cannot say the same for the constituent states or for isolated groups of fanatics. Persecution of Jews and Negroes and Catholics has existed in the United States during the past century and a half. Never once, during the hectic days of unofficial intolerance, have Catholic clergymen in this country been listed on the side of the persecutors. Be this said to their honor and their pride. Mr. Roosevelt's implied denunciation of anti-Semitism is not merely commendable, it is also strange. Moreover, it is a bit too late. Where were you, Mr. Roosevelt, when an acknowledged former member of the Ku Klux Klan was appointed a justice of the United States Supreme Court? You knew the history of the Ku Klux Klan in this country? You knew, or you should have known, of the midnight rides and the burning of crosses and the terrorization of whole countrysides by bigots who sought to bury their identities in a nightshirt. You knew how Jew and Catholic and Negro were marked for attack by the Constitution and activities of the KKK. You knew the racketeering history of this anti-American organization. You knew, as everyone else did, of the KKK's terroristic campaign against Jew and Catholic and Negro alike. Where was your voice when United States senators asserted that they would not have voted to approve the appointment had they known before they voted of the candidate's former membership in the KKK? The Jews, the Catholics, and the Negroes of America did not then have the comfort of either the direct or indirect Rooseveltian criticism of the appointment of a former Klansman to one of the highest offices within the gift of the American nation. Rather, your family name supported that appointment. We Catholics, Mr. Roosevelt, all of us unitedly, make no distinction in our denunciation of persecution. We are against all persecutors and against all persecution. We denounce any persecution of the Jew because he is a Jew. We denounce any persecution of the Protestant because he is a Protestant. We denounce any persecution of the Catholic because he is a Catholic. We are against the persecutions of Nazi Germany and the persecutions of communistic Russia. We were against the persecutors of Christians in Red Loyalist Spain. Where again, Mr. Roosevelt, was your voice and family prestige when the troops of Red Loyalist Spain butchered Catholic men, women, and children by the tens of thousands? Where was your voice and family prestige when Fernando de los Rios, the representative of the government of Red Loyalist Spain, received comfort and support at the hands of many
in the official life of Washington? Where was your voice and family prestige, Mr. Roosevelt, when the Red government of dictator Stalin in Soviet Russia liquidated millions of poor, helpless peasants in the Ukraine? Where was your voice and your family prestige, Mr. Roosevelt, when the Mexican government persecuted Catholics a decade of years ago? Your sudden denunciation of anti-Semitism is too opportunistic and too sudden to awaken our admiration now. I have in my hand a transcript of the broadcast which Mr. Elliot Roosevelt delivered against Father Coughlin on the night of Saturday, July 15th. I shall limit my reply to a discussion of two phases of Mr. Roosevelt's attack. The first has to do with radio censorship, which Mr. Roosevelt believes should be invoked against Father Coughlin. I read from the transcript. "I am not exactly satisfied with the new radio code," says Mr. Roosevelt. "Because it is censorship, and I dislike censorship in any form. But even censorship might not be too high a price to pay if it will help insulate us against the anti-Semitic oratory of the radio priest out in Royal Oak, Michigan, who is also anti-everything that doesn't complement his own opinion." End of quote. That is an astounding statement to be made by anyone, especially by the son of the President of the United States. Mr. Roosevelt says in one and the same breath, "I dislike censorship in any form, but I like censorship in one form, the radio type." If Mr. Roosevelt dislikes censorship in any form, it is inconceivable how he can like censorship in one form, unless young Mr. Roosevelt is trying to transpose into the field of logic the economic doctrine that you increase production by destruction, an economic doctrine invented by his friends in the New Deal. Mr. Roosevelt is not true to his own fellow national broadcasters of America. Last week, on Friday, July the 14th, to be exact, there was a public hearing before the Federal Communications Commission in Washington. The hearing was called at the request of the American Civil Liberties Union. The National Association of Broadcasters joined in the request. The object of the hearing was to determine if a new ruling of the commission, Section 4203, which referred to international broadcasts originating in the United States, contains even so much as a germ of antecedent censorship. Where, Mr. Roosevelt, would you have fitted into that picture? Your statement that you like censorship in one form absolutely denies your statement that you dislike censorship in any form. You would have found yourself opposed to the Federal Communications Commission, to the leftist American Civil Liberties Union, and to the rightist National Association of Broadcasters. Either you believe in antecedent censorship, or you do not believe in antecedent censorship. There is no middle ground in this matter. Blinded by your uncharitable bitterness towards Father Coughlin, Mr. Roosevelt, you have placed yourself on the unenviable and un-American spot, proclaiming that the object of your pet hatred should be censored, but that all other objects of your love and admiration should not be censored. This is a denial of freedom of speech to which Father Coughlin has just as much right as you yourself. Perhaps by now, if you are listening, Mr. Roosevelt, you have included me in the list of those who should be denied the use of the radio by the process of antecedent censorship because I have presumed to defend Father Coughlin against your unwarranted and uncharitable attack. I shall now take up the charge of anti-Semitism which Mr. Roosevelt has made against Father Coughlin. The wild charges of anti-Semitism which fill the horizon with rainless clouds is part and parcel of the leftist campaign in this country to distract attention from leftist penetration and progress. In addition to the use of the adjective anti-Semitic in referring to Father Coughlin, Mr. Roosevelt refers explicitly on page 3 of his manuscript to what he terms Father Coughlin's, quote, known anti-Semitism, period quotes. Further down on the same page, Mr. Roosevelt refers to Father Coughlin's future addresses in the following sentence. I hope, says Mr. Roosevelt, for his sake, that the information he uses in his future speeches will be more accurate than has been the custom in the present. End of quote. Dr. Roosevelt, cure yourself. Where is the accurate information on which you base your charge of anti-Semitism against Father Coughlin? No intelligent American is going to accept your phraseology of Father Coughlin's known anti-Semitism as proof. By whom is it known? And what is known about it? And what do you know about it? And where did you get your knowledge? And how did you arrive at your conclusion? And are you allergic to hearsay? These are questions which you should answer. It is you who made the charge, and it is you who should prove the charge. Have you, Mr. Roosevelt, heard or read all the radio broadcasts of Father Coughlin since last fall? Which broadcast would you offer as being anti-Semitic? What paragraphs and what sentences in that particular broadcast of your choosing do you offer in proof? The listener to Mr. Roosevelt's broadcast listened in vain for a single shred of proof, just as the reader of Mr. Roosevelt's manuscript will grow eye-weary in the same fruitless search. If you deny the authenticity or the existence of any document from which Father Coughlin has quoted, then your argument with Father Coughlin is of an historical nature. You cannot transpose it into an argument of anti-Semitic hysteria. Mr. Roosevelt, your recent broadcast reveals you as a liberal who is devoted to intolerance. As a national broadcaster who subscribes to antecedent censorship, and as a speaker who refuses to give proof for what he says. Father Coughlin is not anti-Semitic. He is not intolerant. He believes in freedom of speech. He respects argumentative proof. Your attack is merely subjective antipathy. It is not objective debate. Father Coughlin, as an American citizen, has the right to use the airways of America. Not even the son of the President of the United States has the right to deny him that right. The injustice, the uncharitableness, and the illogic of Mr. Elliott's attack on Father Coughlin condemns it in its entirety. When the weight of an entire attack has been broken, one can ignore the little pebbles that were thrown in the course of the attack. Mr. Roosevelt's demand for Father Coughlin's removal from the air by the enforcement of strict censorship in his regard is un-American. Mr. Roosevelt's unproven charge that Father Coughlin is anti-Semitic is likewise un-American. The un-American attack of Mr. Elliot Roosevelt against Father Coughlin therefore crumbles by his own weight. His other statements concerning the activities of Father Coughlin have been answered by Father Coughlin himself on numerous previous occasions. As peace abroad, as far as the United States of America is concerned, is definitely bound up with the retention of the embargo on arms and ammunition in all neutrality legislation, so peace at home will be increased by a united American repudiation of the smearing campaigns in which the communistic enemies of our American democracy are constantly indulging. The communistic strategy is very clever. It is very shrewd. It is very diabolical. No communist will meet the arguments of an anti-communist either publicly or in private. Ignore your opponent's arguments. That is the first step in the strategy of communism. Smear your opponent's reputation. That is the second step. As part and parcel of the communist smear campaign throughout this country, every American anti-communist has been dubbed a fascist in the leftist press. No proof is ever offered to substantiate the title imposed by these communistic enemies of our American democracy upon those who oppose them. The latest smear title in communist strategy is to label every anti-communist an anti-Semite. Again, no definition of anti-Semitism is offered by the communistic enemies of our American democracy, and no proof of the charge is ever forthcoming. The tragedy of the matter is the gullibility with which the smear title is adopted by intelligent readers of our American press. Men and women who would resent name-calling against themselves or their families without proof find no difficulty in taking at face value the smears with which communist leaders and agitators try to have anti-communist and American leaders repudiated by their own. No Catholic priest that I know of is anti-Semitic. I have followed every broadcast of Father Coughlin since he returned to the air last fall, and I challenge any listener or readers of these broadcasts to prove by sentence and paragraph that Father Coughlin has the slightest personal tinge of anti-Semitism about him. The charge of anti-Semitism has been part and parcel of the communistic campaign to militate against the anti-communist campaign of Father Coughlin and of other anti-communist leaders throughout this country. Aiding and abetting the communists in this matter are certain individuals who proclaim that to criticize a Jew is not merely the sign, but the very substance of anti-Semitism. No real American Jew resents criticism any more than criticism is resented by any real American Christian. Only certain leaders who have no other way of crowding their temples on the Sabbath try to twist bona fide criticism of the actions of some Jewish leaders into a libel on the Jewish race or into an act of anti-Semitism. When some years ago, Father Coughlin criticized the monetary policies of a certain leading Protestant, he was not labeled an anti-Protestant. when some years ago, Father Coughlin criticized the monetary policies of a certain leading Catholic, he was not labeled an anti-Catholic. But when some years ago, Father Coughlin criticized the monetary policies of a certain leading Jew, he was labeled anti-Semitic. Wherein lies the difference? Are Christians the only ones to be held up to criticism in this country? Is one forbidden to criticize a Jewish personality or a Jewish movement under penalty of being labeled anti-Semitic? Real American Jews repudiate this bigoted attitude and propaganda on the part of some of their self-exalted rulers. All real Americans should repudiate these tactics as part and parcel of the communist attempt to stir up disturbance and destroy the peace in which all people, irrespective of race or religion, lived in this country before the coming of the Ku Klux Klan and communistic propagandists in our midst. There is only one radio broadcast delivered by Father Coughlin in which he has been accused by the leftist press and by certain non-American Jewish leaders of being anti-Semitic. That was the broadcast of November the 20th, 1938. I have read that broadcast over and over again. I ask this radio audience to read it over and over again. The malicious gossip of Mr. Elliot Roosevelt makes this November the 20th broadcast a burning issue once again. I challenge anyone to find the slightest degree of anti-Semitism, meaning thereby the persecution of the Jew because he is a Jew, in any paragraph, sentence, or word of this radio broadcast. The title of that November the 20th broadcast is Persecution, Jewish and Christian. The theme of that November 20th broadcast was an appeal to Jews to stand side by side with Christians in denouncing the communistic enemy in our midst. Surely, there is no anti-Semitism there. The reader will find the following sentence in the November 20th broadcast. Referring to the enormous fine imposed upon the Jewish people in Germany because of the murder of a German public official in Paris by a young Polish Jew, Father Coughlin stated, quote, "My friends, it is only natural, however, that the civilized world was shocked at the turn of events and at the imposition of a tremendous fine levied against innocent German Jews because a Polish Jew murdered a German government official. It is only natural that the Jews resident in America are aroused because their co-nationalists and co-religionists living under the jurisdiction of Chancellor Hitler have been subjected to such an unreasonable reprisal. It is likewise natural that Christians in every nation, particularly in our own, condemn this unjust persecution not only because it is unchristian, but because it is unwise." End of quotation. There is nothing anti-Semitic in that statement. In fact, that is not the language used by those who are anti-Semitic. That is the language of a Christian and of an American who condemns all persecution everywhere. The following sentences likewise appear in the November 20th broadcast. On that date, Father Coughlin said,
Number one, quote, I ask you, should not all good men, Jew and Gentile, Catholic and Protestant, Christian and non-Christian, coordinate their forces to restore sanity, peace, and justice to an era which for its ferocity, its barbarism, and its hatreds has outstripped the Diocletians, the Neros, and Torquemadas of old. Number two, quote, therefore, we are in hearty accord with our government, which has seen fit to recall its ambassador from Germany for the purpose of discussing the injustice of a government which has been challenged for persecuting the Jews. Thanks be to God, both the radio and the press at length have become attuned to the wails of sorrow arising from Jewish persecution. May these notes rise in rapid crescendo until a symphony not of hate but of love, not of protest but of determination, fills the heart of every human being in America. May every honest Jew, every God-fearing Jew, as well as every honest and God-fearing Christian, find themselves cooperating in this common objective. End of quotation. There is nothing anti-Semitic in these statements. Once again, these are not the thought and not the language of the anti-Semite. The only Jews condemned by Father Coughlin in his broadcast of November 20th were the atheistic and communistic Jews who have no interest in the preservation of our American democracy. There is no anti-Semitism involved in such denunciation any more than there was any anti-Christianity in Father Coughlin's broadcast of November 13th, wherein he denounced Christian leaders and Christian individuals who are false to the social justice teachings of Christ. If it were not anti-Christian to single out fallen away Christians for attack in the broadcast of November the 13th, then it was not anti-Semitic to single out fallen away Jews for attack in the broadcast of November the 20th. Only communistic hypocrisy, aided and abetted by some oversensitive or narrow leaders in the Jewish world, could have denounced the November 20th broadcast as anti-Semitic. Father Coughlin, like every priestly leader in this country, is the friend of all real Jews, of all real Protestants, and of all real Catholics. Objection to the authenticity or disagreement with the contents of the historical documents in the November 20th broadcast must not be used to substantiate the charge of anti-Semitism that has been leveled against it. One hopes that one can disagree with a Jewish gentleman about the authenticity of an historical document without being hysterically labeled an anti-Semite. The entire Protestant and Jewish population of this country should unite with the entire Catholic population in denouncing those leaders and those members in their midst who show the slightest allegiance to Nazism, fascism, and communism. The entire Protestant and Jewish population of this country should join with the entire Catholic population in denouncing anti-Semitism, anti-Protestantism,
and anti-Catholicism alike. The entire Protestant and Jewish population of this country should join with the entire Catholic population in denouncing all persecutors and all persecutions. The persecution of Jews and the persecution of Christians. The persecution in Soviet Russia and Germany and Mexico. By so joining, a united America will deal a death blow to the communist smearing campaign of lies. By so doing, Jew and Protestant and Catholic will dwell in amity, and back into American life will come that peace which has been torn away from us by the communistic propagandists in our midst. Oh, Mr. Roosevelt, nevermore will the American people be impressed by what you have to say over the radio, by your un-American attack upon Father Coughlin, by your endorsement of censorship, and by your false anti-Semitic cry of wolf, wolf. You have bartered away your status as a fair, independent, and sincere news broadcaster over the airwaves of America. Real American Jews will not thank you for continuing to stir up the muddy waters of racial and religious antagonism. Real American Jews lament the failure of some of their so-called self-exalted rulers to condemn communism with the same energy, the same constancy, and the same clarity as their condemnation of Nazism and fascism. Your recent broadcast, Mr. Roosevelt, is not an indictment of anti-Semitism. The purpose of your recent broadcast was to incite animosity and to invoke penalties against a Christian leader who professes and practices Christianity and who espouses the cause of Christian social justice from which no real American, Jew or Protestant or Catholic, has anything to fear in these United States of America. There is no issue of anti-Semitism in America. There is only the negative triune issue of anti-fascism, anti-Nazism, and anti-communism. There is only the positive triune issue of peace, Americanism, and social justice. Mr. Roosevelt, you have misgauged the temper and the sanity and the loyalty of the American people. All real Americans, Catholic and Protestant and Jewish, stand united for the cause of peace and the cause of Americanism and the cause of social justice in the United States and against the introduction of any form of dictatorship, fascism, or Nazism, or communism into the body politic of America. In the great battle to maintain peace at home and abroad, the voice of Father Coughlin has been the voice of a John the Baptist. Your voice, Mr. Roosevelt, sounds like the voice of one who would condemn the Baptist to extinction. I thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, in my own name and in the name of this audience, I thank the Reverend Dr. Edward Lodge Curran, the President of the International Catholic Truth Society, for being the guest at the microphone today and to answer so ably eloquently and reasonably and charitably. Another unfounded attack, which not only aimed at stirring up a belief in a false charge, but also, I suspect, aimed at dividing the Christian forces of this country, with priest against priest, with citizen against citizen, Christian against Christian, Jew against Gentile. The old days when the rubber stamp Congress operated in these United States to do the bidding of some leaders who were anxious to acquire power within their own hands, those days have passed. And the old days when certain leaders endeavored to stir class against class, to arouse strikes, to seize industry, to preach radicalism, and at the same time to protect communism while condemning Nazism, those days likewise have passed. Just recently, the dawn of a new day has shone upon us. Just recently, great tribunes of the people like Dr. Edward Lodge Gern have made their voices heard from the rostra of America. And the ushering in of that day presages a very healthful, happy outcome for every American. Not only from Brooklyn shall the voice of Dr. Edward Lodge Curran be heard, not only will it be my privilege to continue here from the shrine of the little flower, but I am positive that in every pulpit of these United States, Catholic and Protestant and Jewish, voices will sound, words will be spoken to condemn not only the atrocities of Nazism, but to condemn forcefully all these incursions of communism which have come amongst us under the guise of freedom, under the cloak of democracy, and under the subterfuge of economic liberty. There is no freedom. There is no democracy. There is no economic liberty when communism's red flag stands for atheism, and when communism's hammer and sickle symbolize slavery. Oh, I appeal today, as I did on the 20th of November last, for all religious Jews in this country, no matter what it costs them in prestige, in power, or in possession with their fellow Jews, I appeal to the religious, upright American Jews to join with us in belaboring, if necessary, the communistic-minded Gentiles, the communistic-minded Jews. For after all, this is our America. After all, this is the country where from Palestine, where from Asia, where from Europe, there have come here various races to mingle in the melting pot the best that their ancestors have held, and have come here to live in peace. This invitation still stands, and believe me, there is no anti-Semitism in the Catholic Church or in the Protestant Church of this nation. There is only the invitation for those bashful Jews who think as we think to join with us in
keeping America for the Americans. Again, my friends, I thank Dr. Curran in your name. And I invite you to write to me this week. I will be happy to send you a copy of Dr. Curran's address. God bless you.